Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanako Overhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Michelle Steiner. Hello, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
With a question that is very and well known to the people who listen to the podcast, mm-hmm. How did you come to see the world the way you do today?
A large way that I started to see the world, how I see that today, is my experience with growing up with a learning disability. I was diagnosed with having a learning disability whenever I was in kindergarten. So a lot of the things that I learned in school and a lot of the interventions and support that I received really shaped how I view myself and my disability and my place in the world.
Well, would you like to share a little bit about how you use that to navigate the world in a way that brought you to where you are today?
Yes, definitely. I would love to do that. A lot of that, it was really hard for me in the very beginning. I had to repeat kindergarten. I had to go to a different school. And the school that I went to was really small. And it was really hard to hide the fact that I had a disability. And I can remember a lot of the bullying started whenever I was really young. And that was difficult. And academically, it was hard too. I wanted to learn. I wanted to just be like everybody else. And I just wondered how any good could have ever come out of this. And I thought, even from a young age, this is really difficult and that life would always be hard. Little did I know that using a lot of those experiences and finding ways to be successful would help me in my job as a teacher's aide to work with students that have disabilities, because that developed an empathy for me that I otherwise wouldn't have. And it would also help me as I work as a disability writer and photographer on my website called Michelle's Mission.
Yeah, I think education certainly is dear to me, and I think it's a very important subject. So maybe you'd like to go into how you assist students, and maybe, I don't know if you work with younger kids, but if you do, that would be of interest to me as well, how you assist them in developing the courage to move and use wherever their skills are at to be successful, as you said.
I work with students in sixth grade, and a lot of times it's like hearing a recording of myself at that age. I feel a lot of students that'll say, I hate my learning disability. I wish that I didn't have an individual education plan. And I get that chance to tell them it's okay to have a disability and you're not stupid, your brain is just wired differently. And I also get those opportunities to show them how to advocate for themselves. I think that's a really important thing, is the advocacy. I get a chance where I can tell them, here's how we handle if you don't understand a situation. I can remember I had a student a few years ago that needed help on something, and she was really afraid to ask. And I had that opportunity to tell her, this is how you ask for help. And she wasn't afraid after that point, and she was asking for help independently. And I also get the chance to go over concepts with them, such as I'll get a chance to read the test. I'll get the chance to help them with their assignments. They all know, or they'll soon find out, that do not ask me to help them with math. But I get that opportunity to go in there and just be able to assist somebody and just give that encouragement.
There must have been people in your life that did that for you. Would you like to explain the difference it made in your life to have these people around you, and what did they say or do that helped you personally?
Yes, I've been so blessed to have a lot of wonderful people. My parents were the ones who supported me throughout all those years of school, and they didn't give up on me. We spent a lot of tearful homework sessions together. We had a lot of time where they advocated for me and they encouraged me. And I think that was really important. I also had some wonderful teachers, some who were good and some who weren't, but the ones who were really good, they helped to shape me and encouraged, and they knew what I was good at. I can remember I got to meet one of my very first learning support teachers. I got to see her again a few years ago, and I had that chance to thank her for everything she did in my life. And my mom remarked how that was one of her favorite teachers. I also had a student teacher that encouraged me that I could go on to college. I had a lot of people who didn't think I could do it, including a learning support teacher who thought with my math skills that college wouldn't be possible. And there's that one student teacher that she said, "You can go to college because you know how to study." And sometimes when things got really hard at school, I could just hear her voice in the background, and that made all the difference. I also, family with also friends have really been important too. I've been really blessed to have some friends that just I did make when I was a teenager, and they were just a couple years older than I was, and they were in a writing group, and we're still friends 20 some years later. And they couldn't change my disability, but they could be my friend, and I think that was just such a blessing. I've also been blessed with a wonderful husband who is able to accept my disability and loves me and loves the person I am with it, and also can see the person I am without that as well. He's great. He'll take me wherever I need to go, and he also takes me to work in the morning. And I have a wonderful coworker who takes me home at the end of the day, and I've just been blessed with a wonderful support system.
So this is a very important concept or idea that we are all equal and all infinitely valuable in the mind of God from A Course in Miracles point of view. How do you explain that to people that they're equally valuable no matter what disability or whatever outer issues they may have?
I love to explain that God gave each of us different gifts to do. We're not all blessed with the same thing, but we're here to help each other with the gifts that He has given us. And it's going to look different for everybody else. And God also gives gifts to people that have disabilities. They may not always be the same thing. And I think it's just really important that we look at each other with having that value. And that when we come before God, each of us is made in his image, and we each have different things to bring him glory and to be able to work together.
I certainly know from my experience when I go through sickness or other things that have hindered me or held me back in times where it was hard, that it was a challenge to see myself as valuable. So to go through that and to continue seeing yourself as valuable and others as valuable, I think that's a very, very important topic to look at. And maybe you have some advice on that.
I think it's definitely asking God to show you just the value that you do have, and coming to that with those questions, because I can remember thinking to myself, oh, there's no value in what I can do, and everybody else seems like they have good plans and a good purpose. And I felt like, well, where is my good plan at? Where is that purpose at? And little did I know that God was using so much of that to bring about so many purposes. I met my husband, and that was unexpected. And I was able to use a lot of my gifts to have a job, and I didn't think that would be a possibility and to go back to school. But I think it's just being really honest and asking God to reveal that to you. What am I good at? What is my purpose? What do you want me to do? And I think God will give you those things. But I just think that it's a lot of just asking, being honest, and just looking at we're not required to be perfect, but we are meant to serve and definitely meant to use our gifts.
So you're saying no matter where you are at or what you're like, there's always a purpose to your life, a sense and a reason that you can pick up from. And so it's more about allowing that to show up inside of you rather than having to force the issue. Or am I getting that wrong?
No, you're right. There is that purpose, and sometimes you can't see it. I couldn't see a lot of what the purpose was in my life for a lot of things. And now I can look back on that and I can say that was getting me ready for what I'm doing today. And I can see that. And yeah, definitely. God can always use something out of just about any situation.
Yeah, so it's a big topic to look at, is this purpose, or purpose being there just even when we don't see it. Because, you know, this issue of giving up or being in survival mode, right? Like you just have to move from one moment to the next because you're in such despair or just barely making it. And say, so when you grew up with a disability, I don't know if you want to talk about which disability that is or what it meant to you, but anyways, that is part of, you know, that is a struggle that, you know, people have in different forms, right? One has, so as a disability, it's something that you can actually name, or you might even have a diagnosis and you can talk about what it means and what your challenges are in terms of what you can and cannot do. But also, I heard from what you were saying that there were people who were misjudging that, like putting, even knowing that they thought they knew what you could or couldn't do, and it wasn't necessarily right.
Right. I was diagnosed with having a learning disability in kindergarten. I have dyscalculia, limited hand dexterity that they didn't find out till I was an adult, and visual perception issues, but it's with my brain, not my eyes. Whenever I was originally diagnosed with a learning disability, it was an umbrella term. They didn't have specific ones that they gave to people with names, but we knew I wasn't going to be a mathematician from a young age. We definitely knew that. But we didn't know the full impact that it was going to have on my life. I'm not able to drive because of my disability, but it was funny. My parents kind of knew with the visual perception that driving would be somewhat of an issue. I can remember gym class was always hard. So they gave me the job of, before we even thought about driving, they had me wait a year. And one of my first tasks was to mow the field, and we lived out in the country. And I, instead of making nice long neat circles, nice long neat lines, I ended up making crop circles. So we always joke around that we've solved the mystery of crop circles. And then they had me try to go up the driveway, and thankfully my mom was in the car. I would erect the car into the garage. So that was one of the reasons I got tested for visual perception, and they said with that I couldn't get my license. Other things that can be hard is my hand dexterity. I always have bad handwriting, but we just thought, oh, that's just because of the disability. But whenever I got test, I was in an evaluation, and they found out I had limited hand dexterity, the light bulb started to go off too on some other things. Things would drop out of my hands, and it was really hard for me to do my fine motor skills with unlocking doors and things like that. So a lot of those light bulbs went off, of, oh, that's what I have. And just other things that I didn't know about having a math learning disability, like not being able to read the face of a clock, struggling with how much I'm spending at the store. But I can use, you know, if you give me like $20, I can get a range of what I'm spending. But if you give me a credit card or a debit card, it's too much of an abstract concept. So just everyday things that I've had are something that I do live with. A lot of people think that learning disabilities, they go away when somebody graduates high school or they're done in academics, but they do impact people. It's just in different ways, and it's just about finding different ways to be able to deal with them.
Another thing that I think many people try to figure out when they have something that is they think is holding them back, like you're saying there's a way to that it doesn't hold you back, but this idea that it could change or it could heal, right? You were saying that in your case, the common ground that scientists have found is that it won't go away, right? But the idea that it could go away, is that something that still bothers you or in some way keeps you busy in the back of your mind or not?
I've accepted that it will not go away, and I've made my peace with that. I find it so much more empowering for me to focus on what I'm good at doing and the things that I just can't do. Then it's okay to not be able to do those. And when I focus on those things that I struggle with or I can't do, I'm not as happy, I'm more negative. But when I focus on what I can do, it brings me so much joy, and I can feel the purpose that is in my life.
I think that's a lesson that many of us can use, because one does get caught up in thinking about what one can't do, independent of why one can't do it or not. That may be different, and it's different in every case, I guess, the concrete reasons why you can't do something. But what you can do is also has different reasons. And so you've come to appreciate what you can do much more. Do you think much more than if you didn't have things you couldn't do?
Definitely. I think that has definitely given me a new appreciation for things. One good example is not being able to drive. I am able to see things that other people might miss. If I'm in the car with my husband, I'll say, "Did you see that?" And he'll be focused on the road. And I get a chance to see a flower or another really interesting building or just something really neat. And later, if it's something local, I'll get that chance to go back and take that shot of a flower or other thing. And if I was sitting in the passenger seat, in the driver's seat, then that was something that I would miss. But being in the passenger seat gives me that chance to slow down, gives me that chance to notice details. And I would just miss that if I was on the other end. And that is just, there's so many unexpected blessings that sometimes come out of just not being able to do something, and I get something even better.
What I think is also remarkable is that you learn to trust your community, right? You said you have a really wonderful community of people, so that together you can do things that you wouldn't be able to do on your own. And you're able to support people that wouldn't be able to go past certain things if without your support, and so on and so forth. And I think that's a very beautiful aspect of what you're sharing, is the community aspect. Would you like to share more about that?
Definitely. I think the community is very helpful. I think it's helpful to have a wide variety of friends who have disabilities and ones who don't. I think sometimes being around a lot of friends who don't have disabilities, I get that chance to share what that life is like. I know I have a friend, I'm not able to use the escalator. And one of my friends that we were out in public and they forget that I need to have an elevator or to use stairs. And they said, oh, sometimes we just forget. And I said, that's okay. And they said, you just will go out there and just do what you need to do. So I think that's an education. And I think it's also really nice whenever I do encounter other people that have learning disabilities, because that gives me a sense of community that I otherwise wouldn't have, and that provides that representation, and we're able to be there and support each other and just sometimes be able to talk about a lot of those aspects, and somebody else is able to understand that. So I think sometimes there's that power in peer support with having them, and also with people who maybe don't have the same disability or have disabilities that they don't share.
Yeah, you've been speaking about advocacy a lot too. So what are the most important things you need to advocate for so that you you feel like people with disabilities, learning disabilities, will have an easier time if these things are understood by everyone?
Well, I think one of the things that's really important is having that conversation of what each person needs. Everybody with a learning disability is going to need something different, even if they have the same kind of disability. So I think it's giving that courage to speak up and to refine what you're going to say. I know it's really important for me to just be able to be comfortable with saying who I am, and that I have a math learning disability. I can't help out with math, but I can do this. And these are the accommodations that I need. And I think just getting that courage and practicing with somebody about how to ask for them is just so important, and finding what works too, because sometimes it's trial and error. You might do something and it may not work, and other times you might try something and it's going to be a success, and it's just finding out what works and being able to express those thoughts.
So what you're saying is one of the main aspects of advocacy is to be able to ask or to become aware of what you need and how you can get it. Is that right? And that people can listen to that and gain from that insight.
Right. It's really important that people that have disabilities can know what works and can have that expression of saying what works in a respectful way. I think that's definitely important.
Yeah, and there's another aspect, you know, sometimes one feels guilty for needing help or for asking for help or for impinging oneself on other people with what one needs and what one wants and so on and so forth. Is that an aspect for people like you with learning disabilities? Is that something that keeps you from saying what you need to say or getting what you need?
Right. I think that is definitely an issue. Sometimes people might not want to ask for help. Sometimes they might be embarrassed or think, well, what's wrong with me? Of course I can do that. And definitely a lot of times that's just that stigma and that shame, and somebody doesn't want to be that person that's asking for help. And it's just very important, though, that we have that conversation and we know what to do when we're in those situations and how to be able to help themselves.
Now, for me, it's also a conversation that is important, is because I also have things I'm not good at or not so good at and I need help with, and then it's hard to tell, do you really need help or is it something that you can do yourself? These issues are always an issue, because if you have the feeling you're impinging on someone, even though you could do it yourself, even though that may not be true, but you're not sure, you might feel guilty about asking for that help. And so that's a big issue.
Right, definitely. And especially with getting accommodations, that was another issue too. Because a lot of people, when I was at college, thought that getting disability accommodations were giving you an unfair advantage. And I can also remember that concept of somebody telling me when I was younger, you can't use your learning disability as a crutch. And I don't think that you could use that as an excuse necessarily not to be successful or let it hinder you for what you want to do. But it was such a mixed message for me because I was getting all these services to help me. And that person was saying, you can't use it as a crutch. So I can definitely see that there is sometimes guilt. And sometimes people might even think, oh, somebody else has it worse off than I do. So it can be, and it took a long time for me to wrap that around my head about how I felt about getting services, how I thought about getting help, and how I thought about advocating. And I think sometimes there was also that shame too, that I didn't want anyone to know. In fact, I had a friend that told me in a writer's group, you should really write about having a learning disability. And I didn't want to write about that because of that shame. And when I finally just accepted who I am and that giving these services was helping me, that really just helped to alleviate a lot of the shame that came in from wanting help.
Yeah, another thing is, so I hear that one of your skills is using words, right? And speaking and sharing and talking about things and being honest. How has that impacted your life? Because it sounds like you like to write, because otherwise you wouldn't have been in a writer's group. You like to share and think about things and share your thoughts. So getting into this writing is a very creative thing as well, right? And it can be very helpful to people. So the power of words, I think that's a really, really important issue in your life, how you could recognize that getting all this help enabled you to use the power of words that is yours to help others, right?
Definitely. Writing is what gave me a voice, because sometimes there might be things that you may not want to say to somebody else, but my characters could say that in a story, and that helped me to get a lot of those emotions out. Sometimes it also helps me to work out how I'm feeling is when I write things. My dad, I can still remember, he found a story that I wrote about a dinosaur when I was in third grade, and he said, well, this is really good, and that just encouraged that for me to write more things. And I found that when I write and I share my story about having a disability or different aspects of it, I get a lot of people that say, oh, that's my story, and I know how you feel. And that's definitely something that I love to be able to do, is to connect with other people through my writing.
Yeah, another thing about writing that I think is fascinating is that your characters can actually do anything that you give them the power to do, right? So you can actually try out things. They could be math geniuses, right? If you got the right information from someone, right? Of how to write about that, you could actually give that character that characteristic. And what that felt to someone else, right, who had no clue or whatever the issues are in the story.
Right, you can make your characters be who you create them to be. Yeah, and that, I think that's the power in that. And that's a safe way to maybe experiment and to try out maybe just different things that you want to do, and you make your character like that, or you get that expression, and there's just endless possibilities when someone writes.
And what I think is also significant about that is that you're accessing things in a different way through the imagination. Through that, you actually set things free that might not be accessible in other ways. So have you noticed that things that you thought you couldn't do became possible through your writing and through your accessing information in a different way?
Yeah, Yes, definitely. I had to just, one of the things with having a learning disability is I have to learn things in a different way. And it's just finding ways that I can learn things and just trying those things out. Sometimes it's definitely with the writing and just thinking how, oh, I can remember I had classes, especially psychology ones in college. And I would sit there and I would try to memorize a lot of information. Some of that wasn't helping. It's when I finally got in there and I thought, oh, if I had a character and they were doing this, what would they have? Or what is this an example of? And that kind of really helped me out too with seeing that. And it was just using those different skills and those different ways to be able to find out what worked for me. I think everybody learns differently. Everybody has different ways that they learn. And I think it's really important when I work with students that I embrace the different ways that they can learn and be able to develop that. One of the things they always tell me when I go in and had an evaluation is that I don't have one particular way. So I need a wide variety of different skills to do. But I think it's when you find what works for you and do that, that really helps.
Yeah, and I think what you learn when you have certain ways don't work and you discover that there is another way is that you can always find new ways of approaching the things that you're capable of, right? Like saying you're capable of learning, so you can approach when you say you have a new subject that you can't get at in one way, you have certainly developed a lot more trust that you'll find another way than some other people may give up on too fast, right? So how do you overcome that?
I think one of the things that I will definitely do is I have to put information in small chunks. I've never been one that has had a lot of success with pulling off an all-nighter for a test. I usually need to take everything into small chunks of studying a little bit every day. That helps me. And I also think that just learning different ways and being patient with myself when I'm learning new information and trying not to get frustrated and realizing it's okay to make mistakes as long as we learn from them and we can do better the next time. And just really having a lot of patience and looking for the resources that are out there too. Sometimes if we come into a problem, I have to maybe see what's out there to help myself. For example, I cannot use a manual can opener to save my life. It's like operating a spaceship for me. And one of the things we found is they have a lot of equipment that is out there. They have electric can openers, and I'm able to use that to open up a can, but I can't use a manual, but that's one of the things. There's also with the hand dexterity bottle openers and jar openers, and those are things that can help me.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And if you have hand dexterity issues, is it hard to type things, or how does it work with writing? You said you had a terrible handwriting. It probably is still an issue for you because you said it doesn't go away. So how do you work with that?
Well, definitely learning how to type was a really big thing for me. Once I learned how to type, people could understand what I was thinking. And it was something that was really hard for me in the beginning. Instead of taking one semester to learn how to type, I had to take a full year of typing. My teacher could see that I was struggling with things. And sometimes I will make a lot of mistakes today, but there's a lot of great software. Grammarly is one of them. There's the Hemingway editor that's also great too. And I can look on spell check if I didn't spell a word correctly. And there's just a lot of things that are there. And I would take that over writing things by hand any day. I still do. Sometimes if I'm writing in my journal, I will definitely write by hand, but then I'll transfer it over and type. And I can remember there was a peer a long time ago that knew I wanted to be a writer, and he knew I didn't have great penmanship. And he said, well, if you want to be a writer, you're going to have to learn how to be neat. And to this day, I have not had an editor that has asked for something handwritten. They all want things typed and formatted. So learning how to type was a really important skill for me.
That's wonderful that it was possible, right? And that it, even if it took longer than they say is average, right, for most people, it still paid off. You know, one of the great wonders of humanity is that we can learn a language, right? That we can learn to speak. And we get the time to do that, right? You know, you're a baby and you don't have to answer, you don't have to respond, and all these things. It's really, really fascinating. So yeah, that's a great, great skill that you develop.
Yes, definitely having that skill was great to be able to develop that and to have that. And there's also, even if somebody can't type very well or they struggle with reading, there's also voice recordings that people can do. There's Dragon Speak. There's a lot of software that is out there that people can use to type and also to communicate, especially if somebody is unable to speak. There's a lot of wonderful software that we've come up where people can do a lot more now.
Yeah, and to find software that actually works well, you know, not all of these softwares work too well. And you have to correct it and you have to rework it and this and that. So yeah, if you get the best of the best, it probably works quite well. Or you have to learn how to make it work, right? But yeah.
Definitely. And a lot of times what somebody can do as an adult is they can have a tech assessment through Office for Vocational Rehabilitation. I didn't have that at the time, but sometimes people can go in if they're, especially if you have a student that's transitioning from high school to college or technical school or just post-secondary life, they can do an assessment of saying, okay, what kind of technology is somebody going to need? I've worked with students who have been visually impaired where they would have software that would just be dependent on what their needs were. Some, if they were going to college, they might have something that would be beneficial to writing papers, but other ones would have some form of software that they could do just to be able to access a computer or anything else that is digital nowadays. And with a lot of agencies will show people how to use a lot of that and give them what is appropriate for their needs and be able to help them out with that.
Yeah, and that can be quite expensive as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. With the expense, it's really good if somebody gets involved with Office for Vocational Rehabilitation in the United States. It's a federal agency. They pay for testing to determine if someone is eligible for services. And I was able to graduate debt-free from college because I used a lot of their services as well. They do job placement activities. I didn't have much luck with them with jobs, but they do that. And they also do tech if somebody needs that help, because it is expensive with a lot of those. And they provide that no charge for the client that qualifies.
Yeah, that's really, really beautiful. So another topic that we were speaking about in the background was trust and trusting in one's own vocation, in one's own ability to have a vocation, in one's own right to live a life that is worth living, right? And this is good to you. So all these beautiful things that you're sharing about that you've found helpful, and you're sharing with your students as well, and you've become an assistant teacher. When you think of what that means for someone who thought they had been confronted with the idea that that might not be possible for them, right? I mean, you've come a long way.
Thank you so much. Yes, I have definitely been blessed to be able to have jobs and to be able to help other people. And I've definitely been blessed.
So it's getting to time to wrap up slowly. So is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to share about before we wrap up some more?
I think we got everything. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So is there any way people should reach out to you if they want to reach out to you?
Sure. You can find me on my website, michellesmission.net, and I'm on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Wonderful. So I suspect the best questions they can ask of you is living with a learning disability, where you can get help and things like that, right?
Yes, definitely. I will do my best to provide the resources where people can go to get the assistance that they need.
Yeah, and I think another aspect that I feel is very important is this faith in that there is a way. And I think that's something you can encourage people with, to find a way. And then, of course, in Miracles, it has this saying, you know, there, if, yeah, well, how does it, so if you don't like what's going on, then change your mind about it and ask for another way, right? Ask for help to find another way.
Exactly, because everybody has a way that they can try to change the situation and to be the help so that somebody can have a better life or a better experience. Agreed.
So thank you so much, Michelle, for joining me and for spending this time with me and all our listeners and viewers. Please share about the podcast with anyone and everyone. Let them know that it exists. And we have a whole lot of different guests that have been on the podcast already and will be coming on the podcast in the future. And if anyone wants to be a guest on the podcast, please reach out to me so that I can schedule something or we can figure out whether it's a fit. And blessings to you all, and till next time.